Monster Man, Episode 124, Sandman to Scarecrow. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're beginning our journey through the S chapter of the Fiend Folio, the 1981 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. But before we do that, there's a few items of news. You'll have heard, no doubt, our new theme song. It's called Solve the Damn Mystery, and it's by Jesse Spillane. It appears here courtesy of a Creative Commons attribution license. We also have new thumbnail art for the feed. It's by Ray Otis. Thank you very much, Ray. The thing that these two have in common is that they are things that I actually have permission to use. When I started the podcast, I just kind of threw in placeholder art and music, and of course I love the song Monster Man by Soul Coughing, but, you know, it's not mine, and prompted by Ray's suggestion that I should change the image, I decided I might as well avoid bringing the wrath of Warner Brothers down on me, unlikely as that seems. Anyway, I hope you all like it. We also have a new Patreon supporter to welcome. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman and pledged as little as $1 a month to support the show. And if, like today's new patron, you support at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to my second podcast, Patron Deities, in which I talk about the Deities and Demigod supplement and using religion and mythology in your fantasy role-playing games. So please welcome Rafe Ball. I am very pleased to have Rafe as a patron because he and I are both patrons of the podcast Rachel Watches Star Trek, and therefore I know that he has excellent taste in podcasts. I don't know if I've mentioned this on a previous episode. I may have, but listener and Patreon supporter Eric Nudon has just put out a PDF version of Ford's Fairies, which is a
free
crowdsourced bestiary based on the art of classic fantasy and fairy tale illustrator Henry Justice Ford. So if you go and look on DriveThruRPG for Ford's Fairies, you'll find that. I believe a print-on-demand version is coming shortly. We had a lot of good comments in response to the episode about the Deep Spawn, and I want to draw attention to two of them. The first comes from listener Mookie McMook, who said, "Why wouldn't a deep spawn clone endless trolls, you say? Because you've got to work your way up. You can only copy things that you actually eat, and your minions are not meat puppets. You live in a very secluded and hopefully underground place. So you've got to get your goblins to bring you a captured living orc, and then your orcs to bring you a bugbear, and your bugbears to get you a hobgoblin, and now you finally got a disciplined enough horde to handle actually capturing a troll once they're equipped with enough stolen weapons. But by now you've got 1,000 spare goblins, 500 orcs, and 250 bugbears, plus you still send out hobgoblins because the trolls are too dumb to organize capture squads. You really wish there were carrion crawlers around here, but alas. You're playing Dungeon Keeper, and you're the dungeon heart. Joke's on you, Mookie, I never played Dungeon Keeper. I hear it's good, though. Anyway, no, I think that's a good point, right? That you kind of have, you wind up having these surplus things. I guess the question is, once you've got one drow or mind flayer or minotaur, you know, why don't you just spawn that a million times? Since, after all, it's equally difficult to spawn any creature, and you are, if you're a deep spawn, you are perfectly capable of taking out some of those big lads by yourself. Although, yes, the occasion on which they would find their way to you is pretty rare. I guess you'd have to spread a legend about there being some kind of treasure in your lair, or even have some real treasure, and use that as a lure to get ambitious mortals to come down there and get nabbed, huh? Our next message comes from listener and Patreon supporter Robert Gordon, who asked, "Loved the episode, but did you miss the most gonzo application? What if a deep spawn eats another deep spawn?" Now, Robert, you will no doubt not be surprised to hear that I spent some time thinking about this, but by my reckoning, it doesn't really make a difference. See, when the deep spawn duplicates a creature, it duplicates that creature with all of its, like, procedural knowledge, but none of its episodic knowledge. By which I mean that the deep spawn doesn't remember anything that its previous version knew. Now, the question is having the template for a creature something that you know how to do, like riding a bike? Or is it something that comes from your memory, like the words to a song? Either way, the point is probably moot, because the deep spawn that got eaten never ate a deep spawn. So the duplicate deep spawn, whether deep spawn creation is a memory or not, wouldn't know how to create other deep spawn in the first place. So you might get a bunch of deep spawn out of the first one, but you're never going to get fully exponential deep spawn. Unless they go back and eat the first one, of course. My read of the deep spawn is that the new deep spawn would need to amass the knowledge of other creatures and wouldn't inherit the knowledge of its parent, which means that you just always wind up with two deep spawn, right? If one deep spawn eats another, it produces a new deep spawn, but the second deep spawn can't produce deep spawn until it eats the first one. Mind you, deep spawn are pretty buff, so if you're trying to defend yourself, spawning other deep spawn isn't a bad idea, even if they don't inherit your knowledge of other types of creatures, because they can always go out and gather more, and they're tough all by themselves. But it does seem that deep spawn are mostly solitary creatures, so I don't know that they would necessarily want to do this, except maybe once every now and again as a really big deal, as their form of reproduction. I did think about it, though. And finally, I just wanted to say that I'm going to be at the UK role-playing games convention Dragon Meet in London on Saturday, December the 1st. So, hey, if you are a listener or a Patreon supporter, if you're a Patreon supporter, I assume you're a listener, you want to say hi, drop me a line. We should arrange some kind of Monster Man meetup. Okay, so with all that out of the way, gosh, there was a lot, wasn't there? Let's take a look at today's monsters, both of which are by Roger Musson. The first is the Sandman, and this is one of those kind of literal applications of things. So it's the Sandman, and he's made out of sand. And he puts you to sleep, because that is the other meaning of the term, Sandman. Indeed, there's nothing else particularly about being made out of sand. He's not like the Spider-Man villain, Sandman, for whom being made out of sand really gave him access to a bunch of powers that you wouldn't normally associate with sand. The Sandman is an interesting monster. It puts people to sleep, but once it has put them to sleep, it doesn't otherwise hurt them. The only way that you get put to sleep by it is if you come within 20 feet of it, and if you pass your save, then every further time you touch it, which can include things like punching it or grappling it, or it touches you. But once it's put you to sleep, it just kind of boots you to the edge of its lair and leaves you there, presumably to be eaten by the wandering monsters. So this is one of those kind of, like, cryptic creatures. The description says that it's from another plane, and it's doing some weird thing here on the Prime Material plane, and no one is quite sure what. A description that is going to be repeated in a couple of monsters, I mean, almost identically. Anyway, the Sandman seems to me like its primary use is going to be that it gets captured somehow or bound and used as an agent by some type of monster that doesn't sleep, like a lich, right? There are lots of creatures that would be immune to its powers. Elves don't sleep, do they? I don't know how that works in first. Certainly in later editions, elves don't sleep. They go into a kind of trance, and I think that makes them resistant to sleep spells. So maybe an elf, or maybe someone who's just cautious enough to stay 20 feet out of this thing's way, like just has a very long pole, or another unsleeping monster, such as a vampire or something, has the Sandman and just kind of like pushes it in front of its hit squads, right? So, you know, there's some defended tower in which the ancient blood ruby of Zabrathrax is kept, but oh no, all the guards fell asleep and someone just made off with it in the middle of the night. The Sandman is good because it's either really dangerous but in kind of a weird way, or it's harmless. It doesn't want to hurt you. So, if you know that the bad guy's got a Sandman among his minions, you're just forced to, like, cleverly strategize. Once you've had that first experience with it that teaches you the limitations of its power, you just have to start getting clever and swinging from the chandeliers or, you know, distracting it with dummies or whatever, right? And I think that that makes it a lot of fun. So the Sandman's a pretty good... I'm surprised they don't get used more. They very seldom seem to come up in D&D. Now, by contrast, the next one is a classic. This is the Scarecrow. Scarecrows are a horror trope that goes back pretty much forever, and I wonder when it first originates, actually. There's certainly scary scarecrows in horror movies in the 80s, and it wouldn't surprise me to find that they are even earlier than that, but I don't know if there's a scary scarecrow that predates, like, the early 1900s and The Wizard of Oz. Not an expert, but if anyone wants to point out some piece of, like, 19th century folk horror, I will be perfectly happy to believe you, but I don't know it off the top of my head. There's probably something by, you know, Arthur Machen and all the weird fiction hardcore types are about to castigate me for forgetting it, but it's quite late. Anyway, it's a classic horror monster, and it's interesting that the description of the Scarecrow tells you a little bit more about what it is and how to make it than about things that would be useful for the player characters. I especially like the idea that it costs a gold piece per hit point for the ingredients, which is kind of a neat way of handling it. Anyway, it's described as having a turnip for a head, which is... the conflation of scarecrows and jack-o'-lanterns is a thing, right? But scarecrows historically don't have pumpkin heads. They have heads made of bags full of straw, right? Kind of curious like that. But anyway, It has this charm effect, which is essentially it can charm you, but it doesn't charm you into obeying it. It charms you into just kind of staring at it in weird fascination, kind of like a cobra sort of a setup. And I think that again makes it a monster that's tactically interesting. And also you can see that, you know, some kind of weird cult leader would have these scarecrows as terror weapons, because they're the sort of thing where, you know, you go to a village and the superstitious farmers are terrified of the scarecrows that come to life and go around beating people up, and then you discover that they are in fact sinister constructs made by an evil wizard, and you fight them, but they're not the main thing, they're just the clue monster, right? They're the monster whose very presence tells you that something more serious is going on, which is a time-honored Dungeons & Dragons tradition. So I like the scarecrow. It's a classic look. It's something that you can seed in advance. So, you know, if you're having the characters journeying through farmland, you got to constantly be describing these scarecrows. Because the thing about scarecrows is that, honestly, a scarecrow that walks around trying to hit you is maybe more comprehensible than a lot of real scarecrows, right? Something that's just trying to maul you to death because it's an undead construct created by an evil cleric. Like, that's well within the range of what's considered normal for a Dungeons & Dragons monster. But scarecrows are real weird. There's just something uncanny about them, something that we don't like. I would definitely think that this is something where you want to include some kind of visual element and represent the scarecrows, and at least make sure that you describe how their limbs kind of move in that herky-jerky, clicky fashion, and they bend the wrong way, and maybe they sort of gibber and howl as they chase the characters through the, you know, wheat fields. Fields full of crops are actually a surprisingly underused location for D&D scenario fights. You know, at harvest time, they can really obscure visibility, and they have that sinister sense that something could be very close to you and about to pounce, and you wouldn't notice it. So, I feel like that could be a fun little encounter. I guess they're not done because in published form, they're really boring, right? They're just a big rectangle of crops. There aren't tunnels in there, so you don't need a map or anything like that, so there's nothing to write down. I guess have a big fight in a field of tall crops is what I'm saying. And a scarecrow would be the perfect opponent for that fight. All right, that's about all the monsters that I have time for today, but we are going to be pushing through this S section for a while. There's a good number of exciting new monsters in this chapter. So I hope that you will join me as we take a look at the Screaming Devilkin, the Shadow Demon, and a couple of spooky monsters made from sheets on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.